It's never too early for Lowe's Black Friday deals. Snag some of our biggest savings of the season right now, like 25% off select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees. And get yourself free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit before the Black Friday rush. Because everyone loves free stuff, right? Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 12/3 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
Let's freaking go. It is Alabama week, and I need more energy out of each and every one of you. An Alabama fan done stuck a finger up my you-know-what. If you're online, you know exactly what that is referencing. This is the craziest week of the year. LSU really doesn't have a rivalry week. So comment below, what do you think is the bigger concern for you? Is it the LSU offense going up against the Alabama defense, or is it the LSU defense going up against the Alabama offense as the Crimson Tide are 2.5-point favorites? And we're also going to recap everything yesterday that happened in the SEC, most notably that crazy, insane South Carolina result yesterday. Let's go.
It's Power Hour LSU.
PHL, extra little bit of swag, an extra little bit of taste.
Yeah. Man, I'm headed to the field. Yeah. Terror of the Titan, I'ma always keep it real. Come Let me on. Team gon' get the power. It's the power. 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 LSU with Carter, it's the power. Power. You were caught in, man, I'm headed to the field. Yeah. Terror of the tiger, I'ma always keep it real. Yeah. Every team gon' get devoured, it's the power. Power, power, power. LSU with Carter, it's the power.
All right, so Texas A&M was probably the biggest disappointment. Is that a sign of things to come for LSU? I would say no, because LSU also beat the team that beat South Carolina. I say South Carolina, Texas A&M yesterday. Honestly, this is just a wacky year. I don't think you could do a transitive property from one game to the other because you beat down Arkansas. Ole Miss also beats down Arkansas in their house. Now, they beat them down worse than we did, but it was still two dominating performances, and LSU beat Ole Miss. So the simple truth is it's too hard to do the transitive property thing where you say, well, this team beat this team, this team beat this team. And I understand it was very confusing to see Marcel Reed spin around like a tumbleweed with what the South Carolina defense threw his way. Now, let's be honest, A&M had their fair share of explosive touchdowns. Their number two running back had a 50-plus yarder. Marcel Reed made a few good plays in this game in his own right. But let's keep it a buck here. And I want to look directly in the eye. Sometimes I'm looking over here at the chat and all that stuff. I want you to understand this. LSU sits in a really good spot right now because Brian Kelly's luck strikes again in one category that I honestly don't know other coaches that get quite this lucky. And what we're talking about here is quarterback injuries. Now, I know a lot of you probably enjoyed your bye week. Some of you schedule a wedding or a family get together on the bye week, especially before the Alabama bye week. First weekend in November or the weekend before is normally pretty open. Hope you guys had a very happy Halloween holiday. Now, Brian Kelly, and we did this similar rant, so we won't go too long into this, but you can go back a few weeks ago and see the full story behind this. Brian Kelly has gotten more backup quarterback luck than any coach that I can remember. And he had another domino fall this past weekend as DJ Lagway is likely out for the LSU game. I don't know if he's done for the season. And obviously this game is still, 2 weeks away. We play Florida the week after we play Alabama. And obviously that game is at the Swamp. And we will likely be playing their third string quarterback when DJ Lagway looked like one of the best freshman quarterbacks we've ever seen in the SEC in the limited action that we saw. Now, what do I mean by the backup quarterback thing? Well, we'll run through this pretty quickly, but we say first hi to Larry, Alex, Chris, Trucking, Carvis. So happy you took his South Carolina ticket to the window. Let's go. All right, so obviously, basically, the gist of this is pretty simple. In games or the week before games, Brian Kelly has seen a lot of opposing quarterbacks get hurt just for them to return the next week after they play LSU or Notre Dame. Right? Lenore Sellers gets hurt during the South Carolina game. Does South Carolina still win the game without Lenore Sellers? Or with Lenore Sellers, we will never know. But Robbie Ashford is ass, and it changed a lot, and LSU was able to come back and win the game. So, basically, LSU is going to get to play another backup quarterback, in this case, a third-string quarterback. And I do want it to be known, lost in this Vanderbilt chaos here, is Diego Pavia is playing through a lot of injuries. He's playing through a lot of pain. The kid's a gamer. It's no real shock because he's been a tough joker for so long now. But I would not be shocked if he actually goes down pretty soon. It seems every week he is battling through something. Jalen Milroe will be healthy, though. So, obviously, Lenore Sellers. And then in 2023, Army, you have to play Army's backup quarterback. That probably wouldn't have changed a whole lot. In A&M, you played their third stringer. Then in 2022, does Arkansas win the game with KJ Jefferson at quarterback instead of Malik Cornsby? We'll never know. 2021, this happened actually three times with Brian Kelly. Then in 2020, Kenny Pickett out before he played Notre Dame, came back the next week. Same thing with Trevor Lawrence, and he came back a few weeks after. 2019, Hendon Hooker got hurt, and then you played a backup quarterback, and Hendon Hooker went on to play the rest of the games. Eric Dungy, Notre Dame probably still would have won this game, but he goes out in the first quarter. He was a really good quarterback at Syracuse. So, basically, Brian Kelly has had a lot of backup quarterback luck. With that said, though, you still got to go out there and win the games. And Florida is still 2 weeks away from now. So I'm not worried about that. I'm worried about Alabama. But to recap overall, I say this because your road to the playoff got a lot easier. Your road to the playoff got a lot easier. Alabama's not as good as everyone thought they were going to be. I was one of the people that called that. I actually bet Alabama under their win total. And if you're a fan of Power RCC, you would have already known that. Now, Florida, you cannot lose that game with Warner at quarterback. He's just not it. He's a walk-on, basically, a third stringer. Now, you can lose a game because, well, we've not necessarily played our best away from Tiger Stadium this season outside of the Arkansas game. But truth be told, not having to play Langway after playing Milroe is a huge W. We'll see what happens with Pavia, but Vanderbilt should be something that LSU takes care of at home. And then obviously, you get a way weaker Oklahoma team, which has been the biggest disappointment in the SEC this year of the top eight recruiters in the SEC this season. So, look, everything shapes up nicely. And I said it before the season, and it's kind of played out this way. A few things have been a little bit different than what I thought going into the season. But Brian Kelly was gifted the easiest LSU schedule we have ever had to face. This is the easiest one, at least since pre-Les Miles, right? This is probably the worst Alabama team since the early Saban years. And everything else is just kind of shaping up, right? Florida's in a weird rebuild. Are they going to fire their coach mode? Yes, Vanderbilt looks way tougher than it was before the season, and Oklahoma's ass. So tell me right now, what is your percentage chance that LSU wins all four of the games? I think if LSU beats Alabama, my percentage chance goes from 10. It's already gone up to like 12 to 15 now that the Florida game has heavily shifted in LSU's favor. Even though Warner looked okay, their backup. But if you beat Alabama, LSU's chances of making the playoff goes up to about 33%. If they win out, okay? Now, we're going to talk about everything tonight. As always, throw in your super chats, throw in your Venmos, throw in your Cash Apps, help keep growing PHL. And I want to get into something else. I want to give a big shout out to our presenting partner, nooffseason.com, and all their sports card knowledge. Please go sign up today for a free trial of building your sports card collection with nooffseason.com. Okay? Now, I will also say this, and I mean this. Texas A&M, I thought would be pretty good. I honestly loved A&M's schedule. And guess what? It's ended up being possibly the easiest schedule in the SEC. I had it as the third easiest. I had Missouri as the easiest. LSU had the second easiest. But A&M is fraudulent. I thought they were good, and they are a very good team. But they're one of the few teams that didn't have to play Alabama this year and didn't have to play Georgia this year. Okay, the two best recruiters, the two best teams going into the season were those two in Texas, in the minds of many. All right, so A&M, yeah, we lost because of the environment. We lost because we couldn't run the football. We lost because Garrett Nussmeier mostly threw really bad interceptions that should never be thrown. But the thing that's really going to sting, if LSU does not win out the final 4 weeks, and I really want you to listen so closely to this, if there's anything else, because we get into chats and back and forth, and I take a lot of comments, I normally save the biggest thing that I want to share with you tonight. Make sure I mark this. Okay. I want everyone to listen in closely. Come in tight. We're all one big family here on PHL. All right. If we don't make the playoff, it is a colossal failure. It is a colossal failure. Now, we didn't know what we knew about USC at the time. USC is still a very, very, very talented team. Okay. In a neutral site scenario, there's no other mumbo jumbo. They're really locked in. So that makes them a better team, right? But USC is 4-5, and you lost to them. Now, once again, it does not mean that it is the worst loss known to mankind. Anyone with a pulse knows Lincoln Riley with time to prepare is a son of a bitch, and their team is really talented. They hired a really good coaching staff, and we choked that away. It was a good game. It was a close game. USC is a 4-5 football team. We lost that game. And we also lost to Texas A&M with a 17-7 lead. So if we don't go 4-0 the rest of the way, which the likelihood of us going 4-0 the rest of the way isn't too high. Once again, I have it at about a 15% chance that they will do it. It's moving closer to 20 because of the Lagway injury. This will become a colossal failure. Because what I decided to do last night was really sit and watch the South Carolina A&M game. And I watched a good bit of the A&M-Missouri game, and they looked like the best team in the SEC versus Missouri, but Missouri was fraudulent. A&M has played a mostly fraudulent schedule. They have. And they don't look as good as they did versus us after they lost by double digits to South Carolina. Okay? This is not good if we do not make the playoff. And I've gotten a lot wrong this year. I've been very open that this is the worst year betting-wise that I've ever had doing college football. Now, I'm not in the red. I don't bet across my means. I bet like maybe 5, 10, 15 sometimes $25 on games. 50 would be like a two-unit bet for me. I don't bet big. But individual games, I have not done well. I have not done well at all. One thing I have done well, and it's, you know, documented actually for the public to see. You go to Power SEC and see it for yourself. I've been pretty spot on about all the teams. The only big mistake I made was Mississippi State over their win total, which I think was 3.5 or 4, right? I still thought they were going to be a bad team, but still, I got a lot right. I got a lot right. And one thing I also got right was the schedule strength. LSU, yes, Vanderbilt looks tougher, but we had a lot of things break our way. We really did. And I understand we all point to 2022 as being a wasted season. And I'm really excited about the future with the recruiting classes that we have. But it's not going to change that this season was a pretty big opportunity for us to at least make the playoff. Okay? But the bottom line, excuse me, is if we win out, we are in. If we win out, we are in. That's it. Take it to the barn. Now, we say hi to Eric. Yes, TJ. And I think that's where it gets tricky. Because you have a non-conference loss, you can win out. I don't see really, TJ, a scenario, though, where that's going to happen. Right? Let's take a look at it this way. Pull up the schedule matrix. So the thing that's really throwing a wrench here is A&M and LSU both having a non-conference loss. But of course, A&M owns the tiebreaker versus us. And obviously, if they beat Texas, it will be in the SEC championship game. All right, because they will have the tiebreaker versus Texas. And if Georgia wins out, they'll likely play Georgia. Okay. So, Alabama, which already has two conference losses, Arkansas's out, Auburn's out, Florida's out. It'll be Georgia and A&M if Georgia and A&M went out. Now, I put this up earlier, and I still believe it to be true. I think the best team I've seen in the SEC this season, and we normally save our SEC talk for later in live streams, but we're going to get into it now, is Ole Miss. Ole Miss is the best team from top to bottom I've seen in the conference this season. And that's a good thing if you're an LSU fan. You beat the team with the best defensive line in the SEC. You beat the team with one of the better quarterbacks in the SEC, one of the better coaches in the SEC, one of the better wide receivers in the SEC. Ole Miss is the best team I've seen. I think they have the best defense in the conference. I think this team, if they were to get into the playoff, would do some serious damage. And there is a piece of me that thinks they're going to get it done at home versus Georgia, who's been sloppy. Now, I'm probably not going to bet Ole Miss because Ole Miss looked absolutely dominant and Georgia didn't. So I was hoping for Ole Miss to play a close game versus Arkansas and Georgia dominate, but that's not what happened. Line currently at 6.5, Georgia favored. But at this point, I think Ole Miss has looked better than Georgia, so I'm going to pick them to win at home. And then obviously if they beat Florida and they beat Mississippi State, they're in. But defensively, they're the best defensive line in the SEC. You guys know I have a severe bias towards defensive linemen. I played the position. I know how important the position is. And I think they've been the best in that department. Walter Nolan would be my SEC player of the year right now. Him or Dylan Sampson. I'd pick either one of those two. Now, are there others that deserve consideration? Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But those two, to me, have been the best players. Pegasus, we're not going to talk about them tonight. Carver says Carson Beck and Nuss are the same.
Here's the difference between the two. Is Georgia
can run the ball.
Okay, Georgia can actually run the football.
But where Carson Beck has a running game he can lean on, he didn't have Etienne this past weekend. But while he has a running game, this was something I saw with Georgia early in the season, or early this offseason. They do not have skill guys that scare you. Okay. It is kind of wild, though. It's a weird spot to be in if you're LSU. It's a weird, weird, weird spot. Okay. Yeah. I mean, he did, but, you know, every first-year starter has a weakness of some sort, of multiple sorts, honestly. I also say this. If you have the chance to go to the Alabama game this weekend, you should go. You should go. There are no guarantees with the conference scheduling format that this game is going to be an annual matchup. And you wonder why I have bitched and moaned about adding an extra regular season game to the schedule. Because I want to preserve as many of these annual matchups as we possibly can. And get rid of the conference championship weekend. Add an extra week to the season. Who says no? But you should go. And I think this is going to happen. Actually, I know it's going to happen. It happens for a lot of games for me, and I'm very fortunate to have this opportunity. But I have a feeling one of you is going to offer me a ticket to go, and you're going to make me have to say no. And it's tough. It's tough to go to a game when, you know, you do the YouTube thing. It's always easier to not go. But I'm glad I went in 2022. I'm telling you, I've been to LSU Natties. I've been lucky to go to all the Natty games in the modern era. I'm probably one of maybe 500 people that could say that I was able to do that, to go to all four of them. It was a surreal experience, each and every one of them. But the feeling in that building after 2022 is something I will never forget. I will never forget that night. It was a thing of beauty. It is something that you can't really describe beating Alabama. And does it mean less that Nick Saban won't be there? Well, the truth is, Saban will be there. He'll be in the building. As College Game Day had no choice but to send Nick Saban back to Baton Rouge for this weekend's game. So, whatever the case may be, I'm excited for whatever's going to happen on Saturday. I hope it's an LSU victory, but I will never, I will only trade a national championship for that LSU victory over Alabama in 2022. Okay? Pierce says, I've been anti-adding more games since the 14 playoff. Yeah, I have too, in terms of adding more playoff games. But I think an extra regular season game fixes a lot of different things, right? Because if you do that and you add an extra regular season game, you make everybody more money. You get players an extra game. You add an extra conference game to the schedule. And I do think it is very important to preserve the rent-a-win games, right? I used to be anti-keeping the rent-a-win games. I used to hate the rent-a-win games. But now, if you take a look at the economics of this sport, and if you have some respect for the ULs and the Tulanes, well, not so much Tulane, but the UABs and Nichols of the world, it is everything to them to play a game in Tiger Stadium. Okay? Oh, everybody wants to bring Mike Dimbrock back. Well,
do you think it'd be different?
I'll ask you this. Do you think it'd be different? Because a guy sitting next to him, well, the guy who was sitting next to him, it's Joe Sloan. Do you think Joe Sloan is doing anything remotely different than Mike Dimbrock would do in this situation? Probably so. But it's also probably very similar. One thing I'll say is I don't think really Dimbrock leaving is the big difference. Okay. I just think when Jaden Daniels is your quarterback, it is such a drastic change that, you know, we just kind of assumed going from Jaden to Nuss, we just assumed massive change because obviously Nuss isn't as good as Jaden, but, you know, Nuss is just a pocket quarterback, and Jaden, of course, is not that, but he is very good from the pocket, deadly from the pocket. But where we are really missing him is in the run game. Because, you know, in the run game, you do not have to block a defensive end with Jaden Daniels as your quarterback if you're running a zone read. You don't. And you're basically playing, it's almost not like you're playing 11 on 10, you're playing 12 on 10, right? Because Jaden's rushing ability is just so much better than that of any other quarterback that you can really think of. And, you know, we just haven't been able to come up with the math in the run game. We can't run counter. We've never really been able to run counter under BK. And it's been a problem. It's been a problem. Okay. And Jared has made this point. He made this point before Dimbrock left that he was very concerned about this offense. You know, taking a step back with Jaden leaving. And everyone knew that, but, you know, I don't think people realize it would be like this. And this is why I'm always going to defend Nuss to a certain degree, because we focus so much on his mistakes. But, and William, thank you for the first super chat of the evening. Thank you so much. We focus so much on Garrett Nussmeier's mistakes, and yeah, they're not great, right? I hate them, just like everyone else. But what did we say all offseason? That there was going to be a game that he throws you out of. I said that multiple times in the offseason. And we're very lucky there haven't been multiple games where his turnovers have hurt us. But when you talk about the turnovers, you don't also include that we wouldn't be in almost any game that we would have played this season without Garrett Nussmeier's arm. Like, that's how good he's been. Now,
food for thought.
Ole Miss has 42 sacks on the season. No other team has more than 38. They had zero sacks versus LSU. And there was a lot of pressure on Garrett Nussmeier. And there was no sacks. Now, he should have taken one instead of throwing a pick into traffic. But Ole Miss was able to generate a good bit of pressure without their best rusher. Now, were there some good pockets? Yeah, I would say probably a third of the time Ole Miss generated quite a bit of pressure, and Garrett was still able to make a play. And South Carolina, two sacks, okay? And there was a lot of pressure in that game. Garrett's best two throws came when he was getting hit in that game from pressure versus a left tackle, the best player on our team, Will Campbell. So, you know, that's what I don't get about the Ness criticism, right? We talk so much about the interceptions, and there's still people that do this comparison to Jaden and all this stuff. And I'm like, well, Jaden didn't have a bad game last season. And I think it's unfair. And Ness has done this without a running game. Okay. Yeah. I mean, if DJ Lagway doesn't get hurt, anyone that's actually watching that game knows how that game actually went. Heck, Florida kept it competitive. Yeah, and that's fair, Cortland. That's very fair.
Look, you know, you're right.
There are times where he's missed open guys, and trust me, I've broken down every single throw basically he's done in all our film studies, right? But like, you do understand our offensive production is on his shoulder. Okay. Let's go to William. Any updates on Garrett Dellinger and CJ Daniels? Or if you're talking about Jaden Daniels, Jaden was able to play with his bruised ribs, and he was excellent again today. And I'm very proud to announce it. I'm also very proud to announce that Jaden Daniels is my entire NFL channel. I'm serious. I do Saints breakdowns. They do fine. I do Jaguars breakdowns. They do fine. I do Falcons breakdowns. They've shown me a lot of love. They do fine. Jaden videos destroy all of them. So not only am I happy that Jaden's doing well, I'm happy that my NFL channel is growing, because you could just hear there's a different type of enthusiasm when I talk about him. And Joe, obviously. Joe played amazing again today. CJ Daniels, we'll see what Brian Kelly says, but I think if it truly is a 50-50 scenario, he's going to power through, because these are the games you dream of playing of, especially if you're, you know, wasting your career away at Liberty. All right. Now, I will also say this. When I got word that CJ Daniels was banged up, I was told that it was pretty serious. Like, I mean, not pretty serious, not season ending, but I was told that he was going to miss multiple games. All right. But the guy toughed it out, suited up for Arkansas, and was a difference maker in that game. He was our leading receiver in that game. And then he toughed it out versus A&M, and he had to leave the game, and it sucked. So the fact that he sucked it up for us, showed me a lot, right? So, and I have been, more than Garrett Nussmeier, I've been a big CJ Daniels defender, because one guy who deserves to be mad at Garrett Nussmeier is actually CJ Daniels. He has been missed a few times for big games. But CJ's had an amazing year for us. And truth be told, Aaron and Kyron have as well. Now, any updates on Garrett Dellinger? So this is an ankle sprain situation. I've heard mostly good things. I would put his percentage chance of playing versus Alabama at a 65, 66-ish percentage chance. Now, what does LSU do without Garrett Dellinger? I guess you would do Paul Mbenga. And go from there. Now, obviously it would be good to have Lance Hurd in this situation, but he was always going to transfer, and he finally put together a good game for Tennessee. He's had a rough season. I just want that to be known because I get a lot of messages about, well, what about Lance Hurd? How different would our team look with Lance Hurd? And it would actually look pretty different because one of the biggest issues on this team has been Miles Frazier. All right. I think they should make a change with DJ Tester, but I don't think you can do it this week. I would have been perfect with the bye week, but with Dellinger also hurt, I don't think you can make that move now. But Miles Frazier hasn't been as good as I would have thunk, and you more than likely would have, if Miles continued to struggle, you would have put Embry at right guard and kept Lance at right tackle. Okay? So it's tough. It's really, really, really tough. Okay? All right, let's go to the Bryce Underwood story. If LSU is serious about winning a natty, pay Bryce Underwood big money. All right. Now, let me share a few different things on this topic. I want the conversation surrounding this to be civil. Okay? Anytime you talk about quarterbacks, it gets volatile. Anytime you talk about NIL, it gets volatile. I will give you my God's honest opinion of how I feel about the Bryce Underwood situation coming from someone that's interviewed him. And I'm also going to tell you one thing that could really, and I mean really, go sour when you discuss NIL, and it happened this weekend in the SEC. Book your 360 spin booth experience today with Zion Imaging. Yes, that's my buddy Jaron Thomas, who started this venture years ago. And look at the smiles on these faces. This state-of-the-art photo booth is so incredible. I work in the wedding and event industry, and anytime I see a 360 photo booth, it takes your event, whether it's a reunion, a wedding, a conference, no matter what it is, it takes it to another level. Give them a follow on Facebook. Book them today. There is a special deal going on now where you can get up to 40% off. This is all the info. Give them a call today, 318-469-4265, or go to Zion Imaging. That's xyanimaging.com. Home is where the heart is, and our friends at NOPOD Roofing really takes that to heart. 504-810-8744. Give them a call today for all of your roofing needs. And one of my favorite things about NOPOD Roofing is their versatility. They not only do roofing, they do siding, they do painting, they do tree removal, fencing, anything home improvement. Our friends at NOPOD will get you straight. Give them a call today at 504-810-8744 and let them know PHL and Carter the Power sent you. We never overpromise and always overdeliver with NOPOD, baby. Let's go.
I think joy and happiness and doing things you like is important.
My favorite thing is sports cards. When I'm not on YouTube, I am building my collection. And when I started, I wish there was a sports card strategy show.
He wasn't necessarily going to be a first round pick before all this Heisman buzz. Now they're talking about him being a top five pick.
Paul Hickey and the team at nooffseason.com personally helped build my Jaden Daniels collection, and they're looking to do the same for you. Just check them out on social media or nooffseason.com. Dental health is wealth, and our friends at Sequoia Dental are looking to help you feel like a more confident person. Dr. William Wilson and his team of experts do everything in their power to make this experience for you not only comfortable, but fun. Yes, take a look at this after and before photo. That guy definitely got himself a date thanks to Sequoia Dental. From teeth whitening to cosmetic surgery to, guess what, Botox. Yes, they do Botox. Call my friend Dr. William Wilson today or just go book your appointment at SequoiaDental.com. All righty. So, before the Arkansas Ole Miss game this weekend, Sam Pittman basically admitted that Arkansas's NIL was not as good as Ole Miss's. And he called Ole Miss's defensive line the Louis Vuitton defensive line. And he called Arkansas's offensive line the Walmart offensive line. And I cannot tell you how disastrous that played off. Right, I remember hearing it. I tweeted out, I was like, I can't believe he said that. Like, yeah, I thought it was hilarious because there's a lot of truth mixed into there. But I don't, and I cover Arkansas for Power SEC. They have done a lot to try and get their NIL really going, right? So what can happen when you get into this kind of debate with Bryce Underwood, who is the best recruit, the highest ranked recruit we have ever landed? Leonard Fournette, of course, being a close second, you run into a danger of making any school sound cheap, right? So let's just say Michigan is putting together the rumored $4 million offer to Bryce Underwood. All right. By all accounts, Bryce Underwood is still very locked into LSU. Joe Sloan flies out to Michigan to watch him play a game. He still wears LSU shoulder pads. Everyone surrounding Bryce Underwood says it's LSU, LSU, LSU. But, you know, as you move closer to signing day, this is something that happens oftentimes with the elite recruits. Your circle can tighten, right? And obviously circles aren't as tight as when you're like actual pros. But the truth is, I've heard less and less out of the Underwood camp. You know, I interviewed Bryce, and it's really hard to say if he's leaning one way or the other, or if he's thinking about, you know, making this unprecedented move. And I saw Michigan's 2025 quarterback decommitted. The one thing I will tell you in this situation is Michigan is more desperate than LSU. And that could mean trouble for LSU. But I would also tell you that Bryce Underwood also understands the bigger picture. He does. He does. Because to be an elite quarterback, you need structure. There's not many quarterbacks. Like, really think about this. How many quarterbacks have succeeded in the NFL with bad structure surrounding them at the collegiate level? There's not many. Okay? There's not many. Now, there's some that had no structure. But Lamar Jackson had Bobby Petrino in college, right? Patrick Mahomes had Cliff Kingsbury. You really want to go to Michigan? Sharon Moore? Is that where you want to go, or do you want to go to Brian Kelly? Do you want to go to LSU? Where there is structure in place for elite quarterbacks. You don't have to worry about great wide receivers coming to LSU. You know one thing Oregon's DBs could do versus Michigan this past weekend? Is get out of lawn chair, sip on a pina colada, and they would still have Michigan's wide receivers locked down. Okay? If Xavier Thomas were to go to Michigan, he would be the number one option at wide receiver for them. Xavier Thomas on this offense is the number four wide receiver. Okay? Let's be real. Bryce Underwood understands the big picture. He knows explosive offenses have existed at LSU every season since 2019. Every single offense for LSU since 2019, to varying degrees, have been explosive. All right, some have been all-time great elite. Some have been good to very good, like this current LSU offense is. But this is where you want to be. This is where you want to be. And I will tell you this. When I was around Bryce Underwood and more so around his father, I think they have a big picture plan on truly life-changing money. Now, truth be told, $4 million, if that is indeed the number, is life-changing money. It really is. But what LSU is offering is also life-changing as well. All right? And there is a different type of brand equity that comes along with playing at LSU. I'm not saying that there isn't at Michigan. Hell, they produce Derek Jeter. They have Tom Brady. They have big athletes, right? There are big athletes from multiple sports that have gone to Michigan, okay? And Michigan is a huge-ass brand, all right? But that is not the brand for quarterbacks, okay? J.J. McCarthy was really good. LSU is a gold standard of quarterbacks in the NFL right now. It's a what have you done for me lately? They have two top five picks in the NFL, and judging where Garrett Nussmeier might end up, we'll see. I think at this point, Garrett Nussmeier will come back for another season. The only thing Michigan can give you that LSU cannot give you in this situation, and it comes along with absolutely positively shitty offensive infrastructure right now, is immediate playing time. Because Bryce Underwood would be the best quarterback, and they would throw him out there on Saturday if they could right now. But that's more because of what Michigan dug themselves into than the overall situation, if that makes sense. So it's complicated. It's very complicated. I do think LSU will win out. I do. All right. And you're right. Jeter was straight out of high school to Michigan, but you get the point. He's been the guest captain and flipped the coin, all that stuff. All right. Let's go to William, who has actually spent cash going my way. I appreciate that. LSU needs to spend the cash for Underwood. We have got to have him. I will always stand by this. There's no such thing as a must-get recruit. Now, are there players that have turned out that have been must-gets for LSU? Sure. There's all-time great players that have drastically changed the outcome of our university. Guys like Malik Nabers, who snuck into our class thanks to JoJo Earl. But that's my point, is a lot of this is random. Now, have the recruiting services done a better job of playing out who the best recruits are? Yes. Yes. They have done really, really, really good at picking out who the best quarterbacks are. It didn't start out like this, but Cade Klubnik turned out to be the highest-ranked quarterback recruit. And even though he's not that great, he did turn out basically to be one of the better quarterbacks, if not the best. DJ Lagway, before he got hurt, looked like the best true freshman quarterback this season. Bryce Young was the number one quarterback recruit. They got that right. Trevor Lawrence was the number one quarterback recruit. They got that right. All right. Caleb Williams was the number one quarterback recruit. They got that right. Spencer Rattler was the number one quarterback recruit. Mostly got that right. So, Quinn Ewers was the number one quarterback recruit. Mostly got that right, even though I strongly disagreed with that. Arch Manning was the number one quarterback recruit. Had a lot of issues with how it went about, how the rating services actually rated him, but we'll see how it works out for Texas. He looks to be pretty good. So, yeah, Bryce Underwood, no matter where he's going to go, it's going to be pretty good. And is it worth the money to guarantee great quarterback play? Yes. But let me ask you this. Let's just say, theoretically, once again, this is not me reporting anything. Let's just say, theoretically, LSU has $20 million that they can give out to players, recruits, all that stuff. And let's just say it costs $4 million. Now, $20 million is a high number. Let's use Ryan Day's number of $13 million. Okay, say it takes $13 million. Are you willing to give extra to get him here? All right. Are you willing to do that? This is true. There is a point. There is a point to where it becomes too much. And that's the price of doing business. Okay. But I will tell you this. I will defend Bryce Underwood's decision. Regardless, I will defend it. As I do most high school recruits' decision. All right. Yeah, Mac, that makes sense. But do you think Brian Kelly is willing to do that? No. No coach will ever do that. I'm sorry. Okay. $4 million and a Raptor will get it done. Anyone who can't be objective about a quarterback. Yeah, Carlos, you've really gone in on Garrett Nussmeier tonight. All right. It just seems like some LSU fans talk about like him throwing away games or whatever. I mean, I really don't know how to put this other than being so unfreaking believably critical about LSU's offensive line this year. But if we are being honest, we knew going into the season that there would probably be a game that Garrett Nussmeier threw us out of. All right. I don't think anyone disagreed with that. I said that a lot during the offseason, that there's going to be a lot of these two touchdown, two interception games, three touchdown, two interception games that you just hope you win. Right. But I would say if we were to go through the entire SEC, and Jared, thank you for the super chat. I really do appreciate it. Okay. If we were to look throughout the SEC, which quarterback has actually lived up to the expectation this year? There's a lot that have performed at or below expectation. LSU is no different. And I could argue that Garrett Nussmeier has played above expectation. And this would be my question for everyone. Has Miles Frazier been as good as we thought he was going to be this year? I think most of us agree that Miles Frazier is going to be pretty daggum good this year. It's been tough luck. He's had some good moments. He's also had some rough moments. All right. What about Emory Jones? Has he been as good? I think the PFF grades on Emory Jones have been harsh. I really do. All right. But PFF has grilled Emory Jones this year. Grilled him. Center. What about center? DJ Chesser has gotten blown back into the quarterback pretty often. It is really hard to play quarterback when the center's in your lap. And I have often pointed out that having or not having a run game is sometimes overrated. Okay. But he's had no run game outside of the South Carolina game. in SEC games. He's really had no run game outside of South Carolina, maybe Arkansas, but no run game early versus UCLA, no run game versus South Carolina, no run game versus USC, no run game versus Ole Miss, Kanan Durham versus Alabama, no run game versus A&M. I mean, we're talking about non-existent run game. So how else is the points being scored? It's him. Like I don't understand it. Okay. Hey, Chris Dreamless. Everybody, welcome Chris Dreamless to the channel. And congrats, Chris, to the Dodgers. I don't know if you're a Dodgers fan, but congrats to all the Dodgers fans. By the way, my big theory, and I really do mean this, all right, I'll go to the grave saying this. It is amazing how much we have overlooked this Ohtani betting story. All right. And the funny thing about the Ohtani betting story is I think the best, right? I think the best case scenario, it was his translator that went rogue, right? But like it was kind of poetic that the year Pete Rose died was the same year that Shohei Ohtani won the World Series. Like, yo, like the Ohtani story is still, to me, the biggest sports story of the season. Not so much in what happened, but what could have happened, right? And it's a little bit different. Like, I see LeBron do DraftKings ads and stuff like that, but it is so strange that, what, the best, you can argue the best athlete in the in his prime of his career alive right now was in the middle of this. And this adds to the Garrett Nussmeier discussion. But everybody, welcome Chris to the channel. Okay. And this is something that I've tried to not do so much of. The play calling hadn't been the best. Okay. Now, here's what I want you to do. All right. And I see a lot of you, like Cortland. When your QB is 50%, all right, I want you to point out, Cortland, and I would love you to point this out and send these to me, all right? Because I've watched every Garrett Nussmeier throw. Are there some misses? Yeah, there are some misses. And I have objectively called out the deep passing game being an issue. By the way, I released an NFL film study on Garrett Nussmeier this week on my NFL channel, which I listed more negatives than positives. And once again, I did it for an NFL channel. I was looking at him purely through an NFL lens, which is different than a college lens. Okay. You could go watch it. I shared a lot of things about Garrett that I don't like from an NFL perspective and why he should come back for LSU this next season. But what I want you to do is tell me how many are there schemed open things that Garrett misses like consistently that I don't see? Maybe you guys see it and I don't. I mean, there are some that come to mind. The Kyren Lacy deep shot down the sideline, first play of the final drive versus Ole Miss. Yeah, you should hit that. Also had Aaron Anderson on a slot fade that he missed. I mean, look, there's misses we can all go to, right? But I want this to also be very clear as well. I do a Tennessee film study every week, every single week, and I don't watch every play. I don't. But when I tell you, and by the way, I think Nico is more talented than Gary Nussmeier. All right. When I tell you, though, how many wide open scheme things there are in that offense, it is insane. Like the sequencing of the play calling, how they get numbers in the run game, how they pull. Like watching our guys pull is like pulling teeth. Watching their guys pull, it is a thing of beauty. Are their offensive linemen that much better than ours? Hell no. Lance Hurd was literally a backup. All right? Their guys are not that much better. They pull guys around easily. It's a play caller. The structure. Now, I'm not saying we should run Tennessee stuff. You don't, and nor should we run that unless you want to fully commit to it. You got to fully commit to that offense for it to work. Okay. Oh, yeah. No. And look, Nuss goes on stretches where he's terrible. Beginning of the third quarter versus Ole Miss was bad. Third quarter versus Texas A&M, not great either. Right? He goes on stretches where it's not pretty. But, you know, I watch a Tennessee game. There's some crazy things that Nico does, but there's also some plays that are QB-proof, right? Exactly. William, welcome.
Like,
I mean, what I'm literally blown away by how many people that have been watching me for a long time that criticize Nuss. Like, I mean, it is crazy. And how many, like, hateful, not hateful, but messages I get from people that say, hey, dude, you're taking it way too easy on Gary Nussmeier. God bless America. God bless America. All right.
This is what you're not getting, Carvis. We can't run for 3 yards. We can't. Like, there's this fantasy world that we can run for. We can't even do that. Like, we can't. It is impossible. All right. Find the runs for 3 yards. They don't exist. Even when we have numbers in the box, right? Here's the issue with the numbers in the box stuff is, you know, Brian Kelly talked about this earlier this season versus Nichols, right? They gave us a bunch of throwing numbers when it comes to the box numbers, whatever. All right. With our run scheme, we have an offense, and part of this is on us because we're not hitting the deep passes over the top. But it's also been hard to hit the deep passes because we cannot punish teams that sit in two high shells in the run game. We are not talented enough to block it. Like, where are the three-yard runs versus A&M? I'll tell you this. They did not exist versus Ole Miss. Thus, Garrett Nussmeier having to throw us into the game and almost throwing us out because that was the only thing we had. That is the only thing we had. We could not get 3 yards running. We couldn't. All right? We just couldn't. So you got to throw. Like, I've heard others say that. Like, hey, run the ball. Get 3 yards. 3 yards. 3 yards. We can't get that. The center is in the backfield. 2 yards in the backfield. Can't block it. Right? If the defense would choose, hey, Garrett Nussmeier throwing or 3 yard run, they'll take a 3 yard run every single time. Right? There's no way A&M on the 3rd and 2 would have known that Garrett Nussmeier threw one of the worst picks I've ever seen. Should have thrown the sideline ball to Xavion Thomas. But, you know, what is this fantasy 3 yard in a cloud of dust offense that you want? Nobody wants that. I can't believe we're in a society where people are begging for the Les Miles offense to come back. Do you know how lunacy that sounds? It's lunacy. It's lunacy. Like, we cannot run for 3 yards. Because it's not, we can't do it. It's impossible. Every single run scheme that we run is stuffed. All right? It is a negative play. We've tried outside zone. We've tried inside zone. We've tried zone read. We've tried counter. Can't trip over. I mean, every time we run counter, we trip over each other. A play that undoubtedly works if you have decent athletes, that you do it from time to time. You can't run outside zone at a pistol. Which runs? Outside of Caden Durham runs, tell me, which runs? The only run that worked versus Ole Miss was, guess what? A draw. We ran a draw, all right? Which starts off as a fake pass, right? It's, in theory, a play-action run, if that makes sense, okay? We had over 100 yards versus USC, okay? We had 132 versus South Carolina, all right? So 100 yards versus USC, 60 of them came on one run. And guess what set that up? The pass. It was a play-action fake before that. What were all the other runs? USC clapping our ass cheeks in the trenches. 132 versus South Carolina. Yes, Caden Durham was a big part of that. 23 of those came on a 3rd and 7, a non-running down. All right, another came on a really good outside zone run for like 12 yards with Caleb Jackson, perfectly blocked running play. But outside of that, they dominated us in the trenches, right? Caden Durham had some really, really good runs. But guess who also had a big run in that game? Xavion Thomas, which wasn't a traditional run. I don't think anyone would consider that a traditional run. All right? 100 versus UCLA. All right? A lot of which came in the second half when the game was pretty much out of reach. We could not run. All right? Second drive of the game. Caden Durham actually made a bad read. There was a hole to the left side. Cut it up. Got 4 or 5 yards. Okay? Then we had a perfectly designed outside zone run play to the right. Emory Jones blew his block, all right, versus a linebacker. He's got to make that block for that play to work. If he does, we get 9 yards. There's so many of these runs that we cannot block. 158 versus Arkansas. Yeah, very good run game. I'll agree with you. But that's not been the case in all the other games. Once again, 25 to 30-ish came in a second and long on a clear passing attack, passing situation in the first half of that game. And also a lot of our rushing yards came in the fourth quarter of that game when the game was out of reach. A lot of that game was Garrett Nussmeier throwing to the outside on comeback routes, which opened up our run game. Okay? When we throw the ball 50 times, we get in trouble. Okay? So when did we throw the ball 50 times? Well, we did it versus South Carolina because we couldn't run. You couldn't run. It was impossible. It was virtually impossible. We were getting destroyed in the trenches. So do you want to just run into a losing proposition? Sure. And I will rightfully blame Garrett Nussmeier for losing us that game. All right. The 17-7 interception was bad. The interception on the out was bad. No one would disagree with that. Okay. And then we have to keep throwing to get back into it. But at the same time, when you're throwing on first and automatically running on second, you become predictable. And I'm with you. I have plenty criticized Garrett Nussmeier for not running. Okay. Let's go to John. You haven't tried the QB run. Do you really want? Okay. Let me ask you this, John. QB should scramble more. I'd be the first to admit it. I was actually the first one to do a viral Twitter thread showing how crazy Garrett Nussmeier not scrambling actually is, right? Before the Ole Miss game, he never had a scramble versus a Power 5 team, which is crazy considering all the snaps he played prior, okay? But when you say QB run, do you want some QB design runs? You know, I do think it would do LSU some good just to do one zone read play where Garrett Nussmeier is pulling it, right? But yes, he should run more. And there were opportunities versus South Carolina where he should have run. Okay. So let's go to Le Eric. It's just he doesn't have the juice to do design QB runs, right? But would it catch the team off guard? Yes. You know, one team that really did a good job of this. Come on, Brian. Come on. Let's not call people biatches. Let's not do that. Okay. Yeah. And Brian Kelly rightfully calls out Garrett Nussmeier. And I've rightfully done this the same thing. But this idea that, like, it would be one thing if he was turning the football over with a good run game. But that's not really existed. But Brian apologize for calling somebody a biatch. I'm serious. Do it, RSI. I'm going to put you in a blocking. See, I won't block you, but I'll prevent your comments for the rest of the stream. But, yes, I cannot stress this enough. All right. I want you to think of this, and this is obviously a very, like, extreme example. But I want you to really picture this. When you go into a season with a plan in place and it doesn't work, you're in a lot of trouble as an offense or a defense. All right. Perfect example has been the Harold Perkins experiment of the last two seasons. All right. We went into each of the last two seasons thinking that the off-ball linebacker thing was going to work out, all right, that he would transition into this role and it would work. It didn't work last season. I think he was fine in some games last season. But guess what? It was a big reason why our defense struggled. Yeah, Matt House sucked overall. The structure sucked. Not having a true defensive line coach sucked. But if that piece was solved, the defense would have been better. And then we went into this season thinking the same thing, okay? And we had the best linebacker coach when it comes to making linebackers better that you can think of with Blake Baker, right? He just did it with Demond Clark. And we went into the season thinking that it was going to work, right? And it wasn't. And it wasn't. It didn't work for whatever reason. Harold Perkins still did some really freaking good things. in both of these seasons. But it does corkscrew things because you're trying to figure out something. All right. You went into the season thinking something was going to be a positive, but it's a negative. I cannot stress enough that going into the season, that you were going to be more of a run-based offense with actually handing the football off to the running back. I believed it. Every other LSU YouTuber believed it. Every offensive lineman in that building believed it. Everybody in LSU's building believed it. And guess what? Every national media member believed that this LSU offensive line would be able to run the football at will. Now, were there some people that pointed out losing Jaden Daniels would hurt the rushing game? Yes. I think everyone at least acknowledged that, including myself. The running game not really being a factor at all is wild. I don't think in our wildest dreams that Caleb Jackson being a healthy non-factor was even in the cards this season. All right. Now, has he played better some? Yeah. But he's not really in the game plan. And what do we all say? This will be the rushing attack, Caleb Jackson. You don't have it at all. You don't have it at all. A perceived strength of yours has not been a strength. Do you know how much stress that puts on everybody when it comes to trying to figure this thing out? But nobody is more stressed in that situation than the quarterback himself. It's hard. It's really, really, really hard. And John, I'm glad you pointed that out. And I've referenced this a few times in the past week. All right. Now, did we get an apology here? All right, Brian. You know, I love you like a brother. But yeah, I'm going to give you another minute to apologize. You can't. That's something you can't do. You can't call somebody else a biatch. That's unacceptable. And I know both of y'all pretty well. Both of y'all have my numbers. No room for hate here. Now, here's what you're going to do. Next 10 to 15 minutes. I'll answer as many questions as we possibly can. If you super chat, we'll keep it going. Y'all, this is a big problem for me. Okay, big, big, big problem for me. All right. I do a lot of underdog best ball drafts, right? And Underdog, of course, partnered with the PHL. In the past, you can actually still go use my promo code at Card of the Power. All right, we're not going to do the drop your number stuff. All right, since Brian started it,
We had to put him in a quick timeout here. But you can't call people names on here. You can't do that. Can't do that. Let me see. You can't call people names on here. This is an inclusive community. Okay? Now, you don't think BK can win the big game? He gets out coached. He won this very game 2 years ago versus a better coach who's going to be on the sideline. And he did out coach Nick. So I was telling you about the underdog best ball stuff. I did not draft Derrick Henry enough. The bottom line, if you draft Derrick Henry, you won big. That's all there is to it. You draft Derrick Henry, you won. Or you're winning. I just didn't draft him enough. Like, he's been that much better than pretty much every player at their respective costs. Okay. And I just wanted to get that off my chest publicly. Now, how about those Saints?
Oh, man. I couldn't believe a Cedric Wilson fade ball on 4th and 4 was a play call. Okay?
Saints are pure poverty. And I will say this. I am so sick of Michael Thomas. Sick. Sick. There's honestly, like, at least when Russell Wilson took the Broncos for as much money as he did, he left and didn't really continuously trashed the prior organization. Because the funny thing about Russell Wilson is he actually got signed by another team. I am begging. I will pay another team to sign Michael Thomas. Pay. So he's not on the couch tweeting about Saints games anymore. And that just showed you how ass he was for the Saints these last couple of seasons when he took us for $20 million a year. I'm sorry, I don't know about you guys, but if somebody ever gave me $20 million a year to do whatever, any organization, I'm going to do whatever it is in my power to help that organization win. Or at the very least, not badmouth them. Hell, you give me $50,000, $10,000, I'll probably never say a bad word about you. Never. You pay me $50,000 and you go pop somebody's tires? I didn't see anything. I mean, let's be real. And you did nothing. Nothing. You gave the Saints nothing. You are a Drew Brees merchant. And all Saints fans did was support you. What are you going to do? You're going to sow division in a team and a locker room full of veterans that backed your ass. And what do? A team that is already falling apart at the seams, you decide to throw gasoline on the fire to Derek Carr. What does Derek Carr do in the post-game press conference? Y'all, I cannot stress enough how much I do not like Derek Carr as a quarterback. But he kept it straight up in the press conference. He didn't even do a no comment. All right? My one of my journalists, I was in journalism class with Catherine Terrell, who asked a question. She asked a really good question. Perfectly stated, perfectly weighted question to Derek Carr. And guess what Derek Carr could have done? After, you know, another ass performance versus the Panthers, he could have just said no comment. But he called Michael Thomas out. He said, I've tried to call him and make amends. And all he's done is just driven a stake in between the single two positions that require the most chemistry, a quarterback and the receiver. And now we have Chris Olave's brother. Oh, God, there is nothing better for a team. Nothing better for a team than when the brothers and the dads and the moms start tweeting out about so-and-so's ass and he sucks and whatsoever. Now we have Chris Olave's brother saying, yeah, Michael Thomas is right. Now, unless Derek Carr is out there kicking puppies, should never badmouth a quarterback like that as a former teammate. And Derek Carr said, I've tried calling you. Okay, so if that's the case, Michael, call him back. He's trying to make amends. Unless Derek Carr did something truly nefarious, called you a name, said you sucked, unless he did something truly evil, there is no reason you can rationally state that, or even basically insinuate with your tweets, that Derek Carr is trying to medicine ball Chris Olave or whatever. Okay? The main focus should be Chris Olave's health and well-being, but we can't focus on that. We got to focus on Derek Carr, who stinks. Okay, it's painful for me to sit here and say it, but the reason why Michael Thomas isn't signed by another team is because you're doing this right now. Who wants you if you do this? Who wants you? It's stupid. It's downright stupid. Okay?
And this, I can't believe I'm defending the Saints here, and I'm defending Derek Carr. But Michael Thomas has magically done that. Just, and there have been some terrible Saints signings, some downright terrible, terrible, terrible Saints signings. I'm forgetting the Buffalo Bills safety that they signed, and he turned into straight Dookie Water after being an All-Pro. He's not nearly as bad as what has turned out to be the Michael Thomas signing. Okay. He's got to stop. He's got to stop. Okay. He's so dang selfish. He's so dang selfish. Because think about this, right? You might not like Derek Carr, but you know who probably hates you doing this, but they won't publicly say it? I guarantee you DeMario Douglas is not appreciating that. Guarantee you Cam Jordan is not appreciating that. Well, they might. Derek Carr might be like, and this could be total egg in my face, and people behind the scenes really do hate Derek Carr. Whatever the case may be. Okay? But my goodness gracious, it is crazy. It is crazy. But tell me if I'm wrong. Tell me if you agree or disagree. Because obviously we're missing a lot out of the story. And I like Michael Thomas. My most comfortable t-shirt I wear is a Michael Thomas t-shirt. I will always be a fan of his. And he, along with many others, got robbed of a Super Bowl opportunity. And for that, I feel bad. And for his record-breaking seasons, I'm forever grateful. But part of your legacy as a player is how you leave the franchise. Because whether or not you believe it, people still love you. They look up to you. There's people that still collect your cards. And how do you think they feel about that? They feel terrible. They feel terrible. Okay? It's insane. It's insane. And here's part of the problem with it for me is I'm trying to understand what his goal is. Like, how bad did Derek Carr do you to where it's now nobody wants anything to do with you? Unless Michael Thomas truly believes his career is over and he feels like he has nothing to lose. But the bottom line is the whole team needs to get ripped down to the studs. Okay? The whole team. Yeah. Oh, man. Oh, you want Shador Sanders? Oh, it's Jarius Bird. All right, y'all. That'll do it for me. Shout out to our top super chatters, William via Venmo. Chris, thank you so much. Jared, I don't think we got to our super chat goal. And we got 2 out of 10. I'm trying to get that 10 out of 10. We will be live tomorrow. I won't be on. I haven't told him yet. I will not be on Blake's show tomorrow. I haven't told him yet. I got called in to do a college basketball game. I'm doing some play-by-play tomorrow. And I will have all the details for the stream on my Twitter account, at Card of the Power. And I will have it in our Patreon. All right? Please go sign up for the PHL Patreon. Everybody gets a Joe Burrow card in the mail from yours. Truly. So there you go. Quarterbacks in the NFL this year with 5 touchdown passes in a game. Joe Burrow has 2, and every other NFL quarterback has 1. I think the other one was Kirk Cobain. I also think I saw the most insane thing I've ever seen on a football field when Saquon Barkley leaped over that guy backwards. I mean, what the hell was that? Saquon got it done. All right, we'll talk to you on Tuesday. It's Power Hour LSU. Boom. And tonight we are doing. Of some of that meat spaghetti. Let's go. I need to lose some weight though. Let's go.